Accession number 23215, room 5.
Major Woodgate, Reel 5.
You're saying that later on you were able to get some jeeps that have been delivered by glider.
That's right.
Do you remember when that was?
Well,
when they came in?
It must have been before the 12th of June, because I had a jeep with my Batman and a Bren gun when I dashed up to the 9th. So it must have been, I should say, after two or three days, I should think we got some coming in. Before that, the brigade major had acquired a Volkswagen, which he drove round in. Of course, our brigade major, Bill Collingwood, as I told you earlier, was stuck in a hole in his aircraft in Albemarle and had to go back to England, and he came over with the air landing brigade. But he had hurt his hip and leg badly, so he was able to stay with us a certain length of time. But then we got Bobby Gordon from the Royal Ulster Rifles, who stayed with the brigade right the way through to Germany. And we stayed at Emmanuel Crossroads initially for about a fortnight. Then we were swapped over with 5 Brigade. The 5 Brigade came up and took over our positions there, and we went back to Ronville for about another fortnight. And when 5 Brigade came up, of course they got more practiced at walking into people's houses, so that they moved their headquarters into the main house at the Emmanuel Crossroads. And also, Nigel Pate was a bit more ruthless than James, and he insisted on Dupont, the owner of the brickworks, blowing up his chimney, which he duly did.
When you were on the ridge for that first fortnight,
yes,
at the main old crossroads, did you manage to establish any sort of routine for the normal day?
Yes, I suppose one did.
What would a day be like then on the ridge and in the headquarters? How would it begin?
Well, one spent a certain amount of time sitting in a slip trench, which one's Batman had kindly dug for one, just on the way in. And then it took up quite a long time going back to divisional headquarters for the share out of what had been dropped at night, and then taking it round to the units.
Did you deliver it to the units, or did they come into
the... No, we always delivered it to the units.
You did, so you went round the battalions one by one.
Yes, yes. That's initially.
Yes.
Well, we thought it was a thing to do.
Did they ever run seriously short of anything important?
I don't think so, no.
So the ammunition supply kept up and there.
Well, they were running short of on that awful 12th of June.
Yes.
When we got some up to them. No, I don't think I did. Alistair Pearson always said he was very pleased.
What about water? Where did you get that from?
Oh, a water cart used to come round. How it got there, I don't... It just sometimes appeared.
So the main things are ammunition, water, food, aren't they?
Yes, yes, yes. No, it... of course, we had transport coming up by road, that came over by sea. And I remember the have you met Bill Mills, the 9th Battalion? He's very much involved with the Battery Museum. And I always remember him arriving. Took him up to the 9th. Very relieved to see him, because I thought, well, I shan't have to go up to the 9th so much now.
So you said you spent quite a lot of time in the slit trench. Would that be during times of bombardment?
Hmm?
You said you spent quite a little time in the slit trench. Would that be during times of bombardment?
Yes.
I mean, did the enemy attempt to attack the headquarters directly? Do you remember if there was any...
Yes. There was an attack. That was when the intelligence officer got killed, which I knew was going on. But there was so much to do of one's own things that anything like that I left to the G people to deal with, or the Defence Platoon Command. I didn't go and interfere with other people's what they were doing.
Did you have to spend a lot of time doing paperwork then during that?
Well, one did. Yes, the clerk, Sergeant Lane, who was a parachuting clerk, was very good. He got everything ready for one. So one didn't spend an enormous amount on paperwork. Unfortunately, one morning a British aircraft came over and shot up our headquarters and wounded the chief clerk, which was a nuisance. And how we managed without him, I don't know. That was rather later, during our second, after we'd been back in Romville for a week or fortnight, then we went back again to Le Mesnil Crossroads, and it was during that time that he got injured.
What were you doing then when you were back at the first time you went back? You went back from Le Mesnil and you were at Romville.
Yes.
What was the role of the brigade at Romville, when it was at Romville?
There were various things to do. There was a very vulnerable flank looking towards the River Orne.
Yes.
The left flank was very vulnerable towards Herouville and Escoville.
Yeah.
That there was always something happening there.
This is on the plain of Caen, isn't it?
Yes.
21 Panzer were north to the south, weren't they?
That's right. Yes.
And that, I mean, do you remember if they made any attempts to push into the perimeter while you were at?
I don't remember it. No.
Where was the headquarters when you were at Romville? Was it in the open?
In a sort of outbuilding of the chateau.
Yes.
A rather nice sort of, a garden house. At some stage, I can't quite remember when, Monty pushed an armoured division through us. They built a road up from the, I think it was 11th Armoured, a road up over the, from the river and canal, and then they must have pushed on to towards Caen. But I think it fizzled out.
Do you remember when that was, or what?
No. I don't.
Do you remember if it was during your first time at Romville, or...
No, later? It wasn't. No.
It wasn't later.
It was either during when we were back in Romville, or there was a rest area at Écard, and I rather feel it was at that time. Because I remember going to try and find an old friend of mine who was in the 11th Armoured. I didn't see him.
Well, the really big attack in that area was on the 18th of July. That was Operation Goodwood. When 11th Armoured...
18th of July, was it?
Yes, 11th Armoured Division led, followed by Guards Armoured and then 7th Armoured.
Ah.
They were heading directly southwards pretty well.
Yes. But, I would say that this was before that, and I think it fizzled out. But how it fizzled out, I don't know whether it left at 11th Armoured, we left them sort of in limbo between us and Caen. I would imagine that was so. And then, as you say, in July, then there was a big push. Where did that, how did that go?
Well, they managed to make some ground, but they didn't get all their objectives, and in particular they didn't manage to clear the whole of the Borghebus Ridge, which was about 6 miles to the south.
Oh, yes.
So it was stopped by the German defence, which was simply too dense and well organised for them to fight their way through.
And that came to a... Then they sort of dug in where they'd got to, didn't they?
Yes. Until the next big push, Operation Totalize, which came in early August.
And then the Americans broke out...
25th of July, they started Operation Cobra over in the west.
Yeah.
Were you able to keep in touch with the bigger picture when you were on the ground?
Not really, no. Charles Strafford, who bought this cottage in Romney, who was our education officer, ran a newspaper called Pegasus, which he listened to on the wireless, things that he put in it. But again, from the AQ side, one was so busy doing what one had to do, one rather relied on Tree to put us in the picture if they wanted us to do anything else. You see, I was doing... for the first month, I was DAA and QMGN staff captain. Mm. And then, after a month, my old friend Larry DuBerry came out as DAQ from the Airborne Forces Development Centre, which was a great... I was very, very tired by that time. And it was a great relief to me. And he became a very good friend and married a cousin of Pat's. And he stayed as DAQ all the way through and up to Germany, and then came out to Palestine. And when we were demobbed, we came back from Palestine together. So he was a great asset, very able person.
You were saying that the worst day in your first period on the ridge, the Bavant Ridge, was 12th of June. What actually happened on that day?
Well, we were continuously attacking the 9th and all along, Chateaus and Combe and all along. Then the Black Watch came up to try and help.
They came up from the north?
Hmm?
They were pushing southwards from the north.
Coming up over the... They must have come up over the bridge.
So they're coming up from the west, then?
From the west, yes. I assume they came up, yes. They came up the road from Wrongville up to the Manual Crossing.
So they're heading up towards the Brayville church.
Yes.
Yes.
But, of course, poor things, they weren't. They were used to bashing on in the desert. And all this close fighting with hedgerows and things was rather foreign to them. And so they got a very badly cut up. And it was then, as I say, that James took this company from the Canadians up to stabilise the 9th Battalion position.
So he was heading northwards from the Canadians, pushing...
He
up
was
the road.
Up the road, yes. Mm. Actually, he went by a path.
Yes. Do you know who were the enemy on that day? Who were the...
I can't remember, no.
I mean, did they ever get anywhere near your headquarters?
Oh, very much so, yes. Mm. Yes. But they went... As I say, I can't remember them. Well, they were, because as I say, as I went up the road in my Jeep and Bren gun, this Canadian company commander said, oh, for God's sake, don't go up there. And of course, they were all over the place. Mm-hmm. How on earth we got through, I can't think. My Batman just went on firing the Bren gun the whole time. Mm-hmm. Very lucky.
So you're just driving through them?
Driving through them, yeah, yeah. I was very relieved when we drew up at Le Bardemont. Mm. And then there was, of course, the problem of getting back again.
How did you manage that?
Terence sent me back under an escort from the battalion on a road down the bottom. Mm. And that went on all the afternoon, fortunately. Having held out, the ninth had stabilised the position. Whether they, of course, later on, we moved along the ridge towards Troarn, you know.
Moving southwards.
Troarn,
yes.
We moved along the ridge until the Germans went back, and then, of course, we chased them up to the Seine. I always remember a chap called Rosevere blew up the bridge at Troarn, and he came in the afternoon of D-Day. He said, "Oh, I've just blown up the bridge at Troarn." I said, "Oh, well, that's, thank you, Rosie, good." But he didn't tell me. I mean, he had to kill about two or three chaps before he was able to lay the charge. And all his stuff had gone astray, like everybody else's. He was a great chap. Rosie stayed with us all the way through.
How did you go about getting replacements to come up,
well,
you know, for your casualties?
Yes, that was a problem, and it was after about a month when we were in this rest area at Eckard that we had some come up, which was a great help. And they were distributed amongst the battalion.
Was that your duty as well, to dish them out according to how many were
required? That's right, yes. I suppose people told us how many they wanted.
Mm. You've told me how you would spend your days when you were up on the ridge, and that you were concerned with doing a certain amount of paperwork and also fetching and carrying supplies and getting them delivered. What about the brigade commander? What would he do on a day-to-day basis?
Oh, well, of course, he was out the whole time, going round every bit of the brigade area. One rarely saw very little of him. Mm. He left one to get on with what one was doing. Mm. He was going round teeing everything up.
I mean, did he still have his morning meetings?
No, we didn't. No.
Random morning prayers?
No. Yeah. No.
Who told you what to do then? Were you working to the brigade major?
Well, as I say, rarely one got on with what one had to do and left other people get on with what they had to do.
Are you saying that you were really working independently on basis of what you thought needed to be done?
That's rather, yes.
There was nobody to tell you what to do.
No. One thought, well, I mean, you knew you got to get food and ammunition.
So you'd get requests for ammunition and so on from the battalions coming in, presumably?
Not really, except on this awful day, the 12th of June.
Except on the bad day, yes.
One just assumed one got what one could,
yeah,
and dished out what one could to the battalions. Of course, later on, we were feeding on, as I say, we had 2 24 ration packs to start with, and then these compo packs were coming in, and later on, it was quite organised. I mean, one just went back to the divisional maintenance area and drew the number of ration packs one was supposed to have.
How long did it take for that to get going, that more organised system?
Not all that time. Of course, it was great difficulty because the divisional maintenance area got bombed and caught fire. That rather upset things.
Where was that? Was that in buildings that they got the stuff under cover, or was it out in the open?
What one?
Was the divisional maintenance area in buildings, or was it out in the open?
Well, there were buildings, but then there was quite a large open area, and most of the stuff was stored in that open area.
Was it just sort of stacked up in a field?
That's right, yes. Mm. Well, it was a quarry, actually. Mm. Yeah, stacked up. Mm.
What happened then when things started to loosen up and the Germans started retiring? Did you?
Well,
moving forward, and this would have been in August, I think, when it started.
That's right. Yes. Well, by that time the RAOC were much more organised, so. Our headquarters moved forward to various places, and I would have said offhand that units, the Brasco had arranged for the supplies, petrol, POL, to come up to a certain place. And the units were then coming back to get their own.
Sounds like a more normal system.
More normal setup, yes, yes. And of course, later on, when we'd moved down the ridge towards Troarn, the battalion quartermasters came over. And so that helped too.
They'd been back in England.
They'd been back in England. You see, in a parachute battalion, you have a captain as administrative officer, which I was going to be before I became staff captain, and also a quartermaster. And the quartermaster, you would sort of reckon on leaving in England, and the administrative officer doing the sort of quartermastery things on the operation. Of course, airborne operations, as you probably well know, you're supposed to go and do a job.
And then come out again.
And then come out again. Of course, one never does. Mm. So you've always got a force, very lightly armed.
Before you went out and dropped into Normandy, had you had any idea of how long you would likely be on the ground before you were recovered and went back?
Yeah, well, one did think, you know, a week or something, 2 or 3 days or something like that.
It was a bit longer than a week.
But then, of course, when we got to the Seine, we came back to England by sea from Arromanches. You had to march down this Mulberry Harbour thing. I thought I'd fall off it. I came back a few days later than the rest of the brigade because James wanted to make sure that crosses had been put on everybody's grave. It was then that I found the grave of the DAA and QMG who'd had this battle up at Saint-Vaast in Aude. Lovely little church of Saint-Vaast. And then we came back to England, reorganized, and we thought, well, we're going to have a nice Christmas in Bulford. And then Monty suddenly sent for us, I see, to go to the Ardennes, where von Rundstedt had a push.
When you were saying earlier on you advanced to the Seine, how did you get to the Seine? Were you moving on foot, or were you in trucks at that stage?
A good deal on foot, but the RAOC had certain amount of transport, and we leapfrogged. So that one day, one battalion would be taken up by transport to a certain place, and then the next day another battalion would be taken. They'd have a battle, and then they'd go on doing it, leapfrogging one over the other. But as I say, there was a lot of foot slogging to do.
What about the brigade headquarters? Were you mounted in your jeeps, or were you?
Yes, I had a jeep then, and of course, by that time, Larry Dubarry had arrived as DAA and QMG, so my duties were very much less arduous, because he was a very capable chap, and he used to do a sort of daily administrative instruction on paper, which I'd never never contemplated doing.
I was about to say that was unusual at that stage.
And he was very good.
Do you think that you needed paperwork, or could you function without it?
Oh, no, you do need paperwork. Yes, yes. Well, you have to. I mean, if you... We had to function without it during the first weeks. But to run an organisation efficiently, you do need paperwork. That's why it always rather irritates me when people say, oh, let's get rid of all the red tape. Well, it isn't red tape. It's if you're running a large organisation, of course, it is slightly different now with communications, email and that. You've got to have red tape and paperwork. Otherwise, the commander doesn't know what's happening.
You have to keep a record as you're going along.
Well, that again is true.
Was there a war diary being kept at brigade headquarters?
Oh, yeah, the brigade major or the intelligence officer. Mm. That was entirely his. I had nothing to do with it at all. He just put what he wanted to in it. Mm. And you can go, they're at the, wherever, aren't they?
At the public record office.
Public record, Q, yes. Mm. Where's the public record office
at
now?
Q.
Oh, Q, is it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you go there much?
I go from time to time.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Mm. Is it, what's it like?
Well, it's open to the public, and it, you know, it's got reading rooms and computer search facilities, so yeah. You can...
What's it, in a modern building?
Or? Yeah, yes, yes, very modern.
Of course, I always imagine it in Chancery Lane.
Of course. Well, of course, they still have some of the medieval records, pipe rolls and things like that in Chancery Lane.
Yes. Oh.
But all the modern materials are in Kew.
Are they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Another thing that's important to soldiers on campaign is sleep. Were you able to get any sleep during the first...
Well, I didn't sleep for 2 days, but then, yes, one did. Yes. Mm. One actually in this sort of building where we had our offices, there was a bed, so every now and then somebody went and slept on it. And as I say, the brigade commander had there was a little room off.
Yes. Did he go to bed at night or?
Yes, yes. I thought the first day or two, he was so badly wounded. I thought he'd probably have to go back, but he battled on. It must have been very, very uncomfortable for him. The doctor came in, and the field ambulance was nearby. Doctor came in and looked at him. But how he's lived to the age of 90, I can't think. Well, he was badly wounded in North Africa, badly wounded in Normandy, on an exercise before the Rhine crossing. Some Belgians threw a grenade, and he got that in him. When we all dashed to the Ardennes by sea, he was in hospital having these bits of grenade taken out of him. Mm. So we had to get Reggie Parker, who was deputy commander of 6A Landing Brigade, took us over to Normandy, and James joined us later.
What did you do then when you got back to England? You recovered having got to the Seine and went back out, and you said you went out via the Mulberry Harbour. Where did you land?
Port? Southampton, I think.
Mm. What happened after that?
Well, as I came a little bit after the main brigade, so how they got to Bulford, I was, when the main brigade went, I had to go and put crosses in, and I lived with the RASC, not our Ordnance, old John Fielding. So I would think I got back to Bulford on one of their trucks.
What was happening in the battalion, in the battalions, in the brigade when you got back?
Oh, just reorganising. Mm. And re-equipping. And as I say, we hoped to be in England for a bit, but then we were rushed out to the Ardennes. Deep snow, and fortunately the push by von Rundstedt was stemmed.
How far did you get? Where did you get to on that emergency deployment?
Up in...